Blog Talk Radio.
It's not easy to say what poetry is. To me, first of all, I think of it as inspired thinking. And then, I'm the state poet of Vermont, and the state bird of Vermont is the hermit thrush. And when I hear the hermit thrush sing with that wonderful song like a prolonged kissing noise, I think that bird is just crying out what it is to be on earth. And that's what the state poet of Vermont does too, and what all poets do. The poem is the story of what it is for one person to be here. If that one person is a kind of representative person, other people read that poem and find that that's their own cry of being here.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to In Our Craft or Solon Art. I am Pam Ray, and with me is my co-host, Jody Melton. Jody Melton and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. Here on this show, we discuss and celebrate poetry that is inspired by creative minds throughout history. If you find tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Jody. How goes it?
Going well, Pam. How are you?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you and who knows, maybe other cool poets. Getting into some, we've got an amazing lineup of poetry tonight. Looking forward to delving into that. And, you know, life is good. I got out and went for a walk today. It was raining a little bit, but since I'm not made out of sugar, I didn't melt. So
that's a Bob Marley said, "There's some people that feel the rain, and the rest of the world just get wet."
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Amen to that, for sure. For sure. Very cool. Well, I'm going to tell people a little bit about our inspiration for tonight. We ran a contest with quotes and poem lines from the poet Galway Kinnell. And Galway Kinnell, I passed away, I believe, in the I don't remember when he passed away, but he was definitely a very inspiring poet. That was actually the intro we had tonight. That was him speaking back when he was the Vermont state poet. It was a little shorter than I usually choose for intros, but I thought it was just so perfect to be able to hear his voice and hear his thoughts on poetry. He was born in 1927 in Providence, Rhode Island, and grew up in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. He grew up reading Edgar Allan Poe and Emily Dickinson. He spent 2 years of service in the U.S. Navy, earned a Bachelor's of Art with highest honors from Princeton University. He went on to do some teaching. In the 1960s, he joined the CORE, Congress for Racial Equality, registering African-American voters in the South. Many of his experiences, world travel, sea life, harassment as a member of Corps and an anti-Vietnam War demonstrator, eventually found expression in his poetry. One of the first voices to mark the change in American poetry from the cerebral wit of the 1950s to the more liberated political work of the 1960s. With some other stuff about him. He was an award-winning poet. He was the state poet of Vermont, as I mentioned. He often focused on the claims of nature and society on the individual, and explores a psychological state in precise and sonorous free verse. Robert Langbaum, a critic, said of him that at a time when so many poets are content to be skillful and trivial, Kinnell speaks with a big voice about the whole of life. So that is a little bit to know about the inspiration for tonight. And, you know, like I said, I'm looking forward to delving into things. And Jody, anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, I really like that intro. Yeah, it definitely, you know, was a reminder to embrace patience and trust in the passing of time. I like that. I thought that was something that resonated, you know, and it seemed to have a deep sense of hope and resilience in it, too. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. That was nice.
I like that. Yes, absolutely. I like that what you said about it, having a sense of deep hope and resilience. Very cool. And so let me check. Okay, so far it's just us two turkeys. So I guess, though, we can go ahead and get the ball rolling with the classic poem I put on the board, if you want to go ahead and put that up and assign a reader.
Okay, let's see, one second. Classic poem. That would be, wait. Is that right?
Yes. And okay. If you don't mind, I'd much prefer to hear this in your voice.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I definitely. Here we go. Let's see. There it is. All right. Wait by Galloway Kinnell. Wait for now. Distrust everything if you have to, but trust the hours. Haven't they carried you everywhere up to now? Personal events will become interesting again. Hair will become interesting. Pain will become interesting. Buds that open out of season will become interesting. Secondhand gloves will become lovely again. Their memories are what give them the need for other hands. The desolation of lovers is the same. That enormous emptiness carved out of such tiny beings as we are asks to be filled. The need for the new love is faithfulness to the old. Wait. Don't go too early. You're tired, but everyone's tired. But no one is tired enough. Only wait a little and listen. Music of hair, music of pain, music of looms, weaving our loves again. Be there to hear it. It will be the only time, most of all, to hear your whole existence. Rehearsed by the sorrows, play itself into total exhaustion and foam.
Wonderful read there, Jody. And I wanted to make sure that we started this show out, you know, after the usual intro, with reading one of Galloway Kinnell's poems. And he really has a lot to choose from that is absolutely brilliant. I chose this one, although the other one I considered was St. Francis and the Sow, just because that's one of his more infamous ones. However, this one emotionally moved me because I was reading the backstory on it, and he wrote it when he was a college professor, and one of his students was suicidal over a lost love, a love that went wrong, didn't work out. And I thought, you know, this is, first of all, on a technical level, with the use of repetition and the way he places his stanzas works so well. But the story behind it, the idea that, you know, offering up this poem that not only was personally for a student of his, but really throughout the throughout history. I mean, anybody who reads this poem and is contemplating ending their life can see that, you know, one of the most important things you can do is wait and realize that, yes, things are horrible right now, they're sad, but, you know, if you just keep on waiting the bad times out, and of course, you know, I, of course, find somebody to talk to if necessary, that's always a very important part too. But, you know, there's such a powerful emotional impact to this poem and its backstory, and a wonderful reminder that sometimes all we need to do is just wait and, you know, and realize that, yeah, you know, like he says, you're tired, but everyone's tired. But no one is tired enough. Only wait a little and listen. Music of hair, music of pain, music of looms weaving our loves again. And Jody, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts on this classic poem?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you hit the nail on the head with the way he was trying to, you know, resonate with the readers. I thought, you know, it definitely spoke to the cyclical nature of life. You know, personal events, even pain and longing, you know, they eventually regain their significance and beauty, no matter how tough it might seem and how endless the pain might feel. You know, I definitely thought his imagery of secondhand gloves and the desolation of lovers, you know, it was beautifully illustrated in the human experience of seeking solace and renewal. So, yeah, I definitely thought, you know, he did a wonderful job with that. The call to wait, you know, to listen to the music of existence woven through moments of joy and sorrow. It definitely resonates with a lot of people that read this, for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like that you brought that line, secondhand gloves will become lovely again. That was one of the ones I actually considered using as a prompt. But I think, if I remember right, I ended up deleting it because originally I had 28 prompts written down, and I was like, okay, yeah, 28's a little too much. Let's bring it down to 18. So. All right, Jody, what do you got for us next?
All right, next, let's see. We will be going with poem by Jenny the Deep, and it is called Mending Fences at the Crossroads. And Am, you want to give that a read?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. Mending Fences at the Crossroads by Jenny the Deep. Took her first steps just the other day, grew up, and then she lost her way. Too proud to admit her own offense, she sets out refusing to make amends. Until she discovers reality, she's off enjoying a faulty fantasy. In life, may she find the righteous way back before she gets further, more off track. Forgiveness is key for any happy family. One day, hopefully, she'll finally see. She's oblivious, living in dreamland, being spoiled by enabling hands. We're unable to recognize her anymore. Conceited, she walks out our open door. Long days will become even longer weeks before she ever truthfully speaks. A caged bird has been set free, spreading her wings but carelessly, relearning how to fly solo. She frightfully falls. Crawling back, her cries echo through the halls. Forgiveness is key for any happy family. One day, hopefully, she'll finally see she's oblivious, living in dreamland, being spoiled by enabling hands. Meet me at the crossroads to mend fences before all is lost into the cold, dark trenches. End poem. And she was inspired by a few different prompts. She says it's a song type form. It almost has I thought at first it was a villanelle type form, but I see she says rather that it's a song type. And yeah, you can definitely see the lyrical quality in it with the use of repetition. And Jody, your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, I thought it was a great write by Jenny. I thought this poem portrayed the journey of a person who strays from the right path, somehow got blinded by pride and caught in a fantasy world. It speaks to the complexity of family dynamics as well, how we struggle for forgiveness and the hope for reconciliation with some family members. I like the imagery of a caged bird set free, only to falter and return. It definitely resonated with the theme of growth and vulnerability throughout the poem and the longing for connection. Definitely emphasized the importance of forgiveness and communication and restoring relationships before it's too late. Life's short. Very well done.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment there. And yeah, forgiveness is so important to being able to mend those relationships. And yeah, a lot of times, as you were saying, we do get blinded by pride, especially in our younger years. I think this is a wonderful, heartfelt write, based on, in part, I believe Jenny says, on personal experience. And I understand this. I know, especially for me, it was my second born, who just turned 22 on April 8th. For quite a while, we weren't talking. And then we mended those fences. Now, granted, he's kind of like off in his own world. Now he's a cool 22-year-old guy with a job and, a girlfriend and all that. So mom kind of doesn't get a lot of attention, but at least I know that, we still talk to each other. We're both growing and mending together. And it might not be any more than like a text every once in a while, but, I still get to read those words, "I love you, Mom," and say them back to him. So personally, I can definitely, relate to this right. And I can say from my personal experience, now obviously it's not going to be everybody's personal experience, but from my experience, you give them time, you give them patience, you give them the space to learn and grow, and while still letting them know that you're there for them if they need you, and they will come back. Of course, that's, like I said, my personal experience. It's not always going to be everybody's, unfortunately. And this has such, like I said, great use of repetition, wonderful lyrical quality, and I have to say what really speaks to me is the lines, "A caged bird has been set free, spreading her wings but carelessly." Some people, especially in our youth, we're careless. We really don't know what to do with our newfound freedom. So excellent write, Jenny, and very well done. And what do we have next, Jody?
All right. Great comments, Pam. Next, we are going to go with a write by Ken Smith, "There in the Garden." And I'll give that a read. All right. "There in the Garden. Leaning against an ancient tree, I rest my head on your napped neck and inhale lingering perfumes of a paradise and the unbuckling of clouds. In your stillness, your silence like a stained glass window of an icon." End poem.
great read there, Jody. And Ken wrote to prompt one, only wait a while and listen. Music of hair, music of pain, music of looms, weaving all our loves again. This is just absolutely beautiful. His use of imagery to create what seems to be an almost peaceful illusion. I get the impression as if, even though it says, rest my head on your naped neck, I get the impression almost as if the person isn't there, almost the idea of they're resting on the memory of the person. I could be wrong. It could be that the person is there. But when I read a line like, in your stillness, your silence like a stained glass window of an icon, such powerful lines that almost make me think of the type of silence of a person who isn't actually there, but rather that you're leaning on a memory of them. Of course, I think he brilliantly leaves his poem open to interpretation. And I do like, on a technical level, I appreciate how he leads his title. His title leads into the rest of the poem. There is, I think, a kind of a sensuality, but not an erotic sensuality, but a sensuality where all the senses are piqued. Especially within and inhale lingering perfumes of a paradise in the unbuckling. Wonderful lines throughout, an amazing right on finding that love that you can lean against that becomes something almost, I don't want to say elusive, but perhaps, well, I think transparent, someone that sees through you and you can see through them. So wonderful write and very well done. And Jody, what thoughts did you get from this poem?
Yeah, I thought this poem, you know, beautifully captured the intimacy of leaning against an ancient tree, you know, finding solace in its silent strength and the lingering sense of nature. You know, I thought the imagery evoked a sense of sanctuary, you know, where the stillness and silence resemble the serene beauty of the stained glass window, you know, an icon, you know, kind of inviting reflection and peace through it. So yeah, I thought he did a very good job with that.
I like that you brought that up because you're right. It could be the personification of the tree itself, where the tree is being personified, and that is what one leans against and finds their strength from. So great observation there. All right. And what do we have next?
All right. So next we're going to go with Dementia Hughes by Hats. Pam, would you like to give that a read?
I would be happy to. And I would like to mention that I see Robbie hanging on the board in Late Night Poets, and I give a shout out to him. Not sure if he's listening or not, but hello, Robbie. Always good to see you. And this is Dementia Hughes by Hats. When I arrived, she was sitting in a wheelchair, her thin body lost in it as if oversized wheelchair. She was moving buttons on the rubber tablecloth with fingers in heaps, red, yellow, green. She piled them with her bony fingers by size. After my high with a brown button between her fingers and thumb, she raised her head and gave me a smile. You came, she moved her gaze behind my back, her mouth wilted like a Diefenbachia without watering. Where are the children? Her eyes darted restlessly around the room. Reality pierced me like a freshly sharpened blade. Dementia progresses rapidly. Grandma doesn't recognize me. She thinks I'm her daughter. I look like my aunt. I took out a red apple out of the bag, a plate from the shelf, and peeled the apple with a pocket knife. The peel was not good for her gallbladder. I cut it into crescents. Grandma shifted her attention from the buttons to the apple. I heard her chewing bent back. The church bells rang at 3 p.m., hour of divine mercy. I turned on the radio. For the sake of his sorrowful passion, have mercy on us and on the whole world. This is her certainty, and time loses its meaning. And Hap says that, she says in her AN, I read G. Cannell's poems, and he is truly inspiration to me. My entry is not about Parkinson's disease, because he did actually have a poem titled, she wrote a poem titled Parkinson's Disease, but about dementia. My grandmother slowly fell into her own world for us. It was sad and painful, but I believe she was happy on her own. And Jody, what did you think of Hat's write?
Yeah, I really liked his. It resonated with me. I watched my grandmother suffer from Alzheimer's. And in the early stages, she would call me my uncle's name. And by the end of it, she couldn't even, you know, go to the bathroom for herself. It was pretty tough to watch. It is like a 10-year period, too. But, so, yeah, it's definitely something that was resonating with me for sure. You know, I thought she, you know, definitely captured the reality of visiting a loved one afflicted by, you know, the dementia. I like the imagery, you know, her grandma lost in her wheelchair playing with buttons. You know, I thought that highlighted the disconnect between her present state and her past memories. I thought the inclusion of the church bells and recitation of the Divine Mercy prayer added a spiritual dimension to the poem, you know, and it emphasized the enduring presence of faith in the face of such a profound loss and confusion with that disease. It was very well written.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. Robbie says that, mentioned that he, I know these experiences. I remember vividly how my dad got disconnected from things, the eerie things that things circle back. Towards the end, they often start to realize something is wrong with them. It's weird how that happens. And I think, you know, like Robbie and his father and you and your grandfather and, you know, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother had, dementia too. In fact, the last time I had seen her, I actually didn't get to see her a whole lot because she lived in a different town than I did. But when the last time I got to see her was back when my now 15-year-old was an infant. She was holding my daughter and kept saying over and over again, "Hello, little baby. Aren't you so beautiful, little baby?" And, you know, of course, she didn't recognize me. She didn't even know the baby was her own great-grandchild, but she kept talking to her and kept smiling at her. And I mentioned to my aunt who had brought me how sad it was, and she said, "Honestly, Pam, that's the most she has talked in months. Usually she doesn't smile, she doesn't talk, she just sits there." And so to know that, you know, my grandmother held my daughter and smiled and talked to her, and then she passed away not long after that. It really is a beautiful memory for me. And yeah, the journey of dementia for a caretaker or for family is a difficult one, but it's also you find those blessings within the little moments, like sharing an apple, sharing a spiritual message together. And I really love, you know, Hap's attention to detail within this. I have to admit, I forgot to look up what a Diefenbachia was, but I'm guessing it's some sort of flower, though obviously I will have to look that up. in order to know for sure before reading the poem again to myself. But I really like where she peels the apple and, you know, and where she says, I took out a red apple, a plate from the shelf, and peeled the apple with a pocket knife. And Grandma shifted her attention from the buttons to the apple. I heard her chewing bent back. And then the last two stanzas, them listening to this radio show together, this voice that passes on a spiritual message that has meaning for her grandmother. I think to me that really does express well how within the those trying and troubled times of knowing that a loved one is drifting further and further away, that you have something to connect you. So amazing right hats and very well done. And before we move on to the next poem, I'm going to go ahead and bring somebody on. We have area code 704, who I believe to be Dot. Is that you, Dot? Hello? Area code 704, may I ask who's calling, please?
You remembered. You're right. Great memory.
All right. Very cool. Very cool.
How
well,
are you?
It's good. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Great. Good night. Good time to be with good people.
It is. It is. Good people, good poetry. Yep.
Absolutely.
That is for sure. That is for sure. So welcome. And all right, Jody, what do we have next?
All right, well, next I was going to put up the poem I wrote for the contest, and that is Love's Last Stand. And I'll give that a read, obviously. All right, Love's Last Stand. In the quiet hollows where the rivers run down, where shadows sulk and sway, unapologetically, the reaper stalks his prey, and I find solace in the whispers of your last breath, a melody that conquers even death. With every beat of your heart now fleeting, I feel eternity's tender plea to hold onto every fiber of your being as if the universe itself somehow would agree. I would defy the grasp of time's cruel hand, appeal to the heavens, forbade his command, keep you close where dreams expand. Through the little ribs of your frame where love and life for so long staked a claim, now death is all that remains. Let washerwomen cradle the dusk in their palms as hens scratch away at sorrow's qualms. May rats escape the plague's dark lure and iron twist and point toward a truer shore. In the silence where our soul found its song, I now belong. I pledge to keep our love ever strong. Where grief refuses progress, relentless churn. From friction, the spark finds its release, and from my soul, memories frost. And I find freedom from my discerning heart, reluctantly towards my new start. For in your eyes, I found the stars did rest, while the lonesome moon sank in your chest. For who am I to second guess? But for so long, there's been no doubt where you belong. And though time stole the fleeting kiss from your lips, our love shall endure an eternal abyss. Until I find that sacred place in your ocean, I'll relax and float into space, comforted with thoughts of only your face. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Jody. I'm so glad you were inspired. And you were inspired by one of the longer prompts in the contest, which was cool to see. It was prompt 11. I would blow the flame out of your silver cup. I would suck the rot from your fingernail. I would brush your sprouting hair of the dying light. I would scrape the rust off your ivory bones. I would help death escape through the little ribs of your body. I would let nothing of you go ever until washerwomen feel the clothes fall asleep in their hands and hens scratch their spell across hatchet blades and rats walk away from the culture of the plague and iron twists weapons toward truth north and griefs refuse to slide in the machinery of progress and men feel as free on earth as fleas on the bodies of men. Very cool, very cool. And Dot, your thoughts on Jody's right?
Wow, Jody, it's really quite beautiful and so sad. It is just one of those kind of poems that brings tears to your eyes. The grief, the loss is palpable. It's about great love. The imagery is on key. And I personally love the way the rhythm and the flow, the rhyme actually, and the flow of the poem goes. The rhymes are just, and it flows without any kind of awkwardness at all, which then of course adds to the beauty of the poem. And the reaper, that part, the reaper stalking his prey, was quite a visual for me. And the heavens are then being appealed to. It those two things strike, in my estimation, deep despair. And the metaphors are great. The little ribs of loved ones thing. How apt and how visually devastating, I think. Okay, let's see, the power of love comes through on this, and it's, although it's sad, there is enough love in this to make it a positive poem, and I think what you said, what you have given here is quite wonderful, and for one, thank you. Excellent write.
I appreciate that. Very kind words, for sure.
Well, good point.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Dot. I like that you brought up the line about the reaper stalks his prey, which really was very vivid and visceral imagery. And you're right. Although this is a sad rite, there is an underlying positive message in the idea that it's better to have love and loss than to have never loved at all. And there is this sort of comfort found in the memory of love. You know, this has a wonderful flow to it, brilliant imagery throughout, these emotionally charged lines. And I like how you interweave parts of the quote or the poem line, because they were lines from a much larger poem, into with your own words. And you're able to share the experience with the poet. I really like this all the way through, but especially for In Your Eyes, I found the stars did rest while the lonesome moon sank in your chest. For who am I to second guess, but for so long there'd been no doubt where you belonged, and though time stole the fleeting kiss from your lips, our love shall endure. And that is so true. And it's oftentimes very difficult to let a loved one go, whether it's a romantic relationship or family or close friend, whatever the relationship is. When you know you have to let go of someone's hand and let them cross the veil, let them be guided into the next life, you know, it's difficult for the living. And oftentimes we take great comfort in knowing that we have those shared memories about them. So wonderful write and very well done. And Jody, did you want to say anything about your poem?
I think you hit on the nail on the head. I was going for, as a, you know, better to have loved and lost than to never loved at all kind of theme throughout this poem. And yeah, it was, I really was inspired by that prompt you put up, so thank you for that. I thought that was very intriguing, so I had to do some homework and really dive into that one for sure.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I always like to hear that people did their homework, so very cool. All right, and what do we got next?
Well, next I will put up Thoughts Right, Birth of Creation. You'd like to give that a read?
Oh, okay. I'll give it a shot. I think that might be pretty familiar to me, huh? Let's see. And the prompt was number 3 for that, for creation. Coughing in this nicotine haze, a garret of rubble and mess. Coffee's gone cold as a corpse. My brain cells wheeze and regress. Skull rattles, a compost of scrap metal pieces, twisted and bent. The pristine white canvas stares, heckles, hack, repent. Clutching this brush, a cheap weapon in my paint-spattered hand, I draw fresh blood in rust tones, a catastrophe grand. Acrylic splash like snot and tears, ruinous void runs wild, growls and threatens, continue, destroy that inner child. I dig deep, snarl at the dirty chaos of this city at night, frenzied strokes of passion, stab with fury, I'm blinded by clear sight. A splash of defiance, a color-soaked shriek, not for decoration, but a raven's sharp beak. I raise my middle finger to the world's dreary drab. Maybe it's beauty or pain that I have. But on this ravaged canvas, a new world's ordained. A touch of raw genius mixed with abject disdain. I open wide, giving breech birth to an entity of doubt. A slimy, screaming body rudely pushed out. So who gives a damn if it hangs in the loo or ends up in the bin? This work is a derelict, vomiting hangover, a glorious win, a technicolor tantrum, an illusionist mad trick. It's all I could squeeze out of a tube and a head full of sick. End of poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Dot. I'm so very glad that you were inspired. And like you said, you were inspired by prompt 3, which was the first step shall be to lose the way. What an absolutely powerful write. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. It's very powerful, right? I enjoyed that all the way through. I thought it was a raw and visceral exploration of creation, you know, filled with chaotic imagery and vivid emotions. You know, I thought the struggle with the artistic expression is powerful, you know, as they confront their inner turmoil and external pressures. Really liked how you use, you know, the vivid imagery, almost grotesque, adds to the intensity of the piece, you know. Captures the messy, sometimes painful process of bringing creativity into this world. Thought that was excellent how you did that.
Thank you.
You know,
great
I really like the final lines. You know, express the sense of defiance and triumph. You know, celebrating the act of creation despite its messy, imperfect nature that you know, embarks on all of our journeys. So. A great ride. Very well done.
Thank you. That one was tough. That was a hard one to pull out of my cranium. It was there, though.
Makes it all the better.
I had to get
absolutely
from this.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment there, Jody. I like how you bring up that the imagery is so visceral to the point of almost being like ghastly, which I think works really well because it grabs and it keeps our attention. And I liked the birth of creation as a title because it not only speaks on your own creative process, but the creative process of those throughout history. And I like how you compare it to the messiness of giving birth, you know, and how oftentimes things have to get horribly ugly before the beauty of thought and creativity can be exposed. coffee has gone cold as a corpse. Yeah, there's only one reason I let my coffee go as cold as a corpse, and that's because I've gotten distracted by a poem. So other than that, it stays hot. So I really got a kick out of that line. But all the way through it is brilliant, hard-hitting lines, visceral imagery. I really like especially, though, where you say, I dig deep, snarl at the dirty chaos of this city at night. Frenzied strokes of passion stab with fury. I'm blinded by clear sight. A splash of defiance, a color-soaked shriek, not for decoration, but a raven's sharp beak. You know, sometimes we have to be able to find that beauty within the ugliness, the song within the distortion. You know, so amazing lines all the way through and very well done. And Dot, would you like to share anything about your poem?
As an artist, I suppose part of this poem actually represented the quest to not just to create, but to produce. And oftentimes what an artist produces or creates, it is not, well, technically beautiful. Like Picasso's Guernica is not beautiful, but the beauty is in the execution of the painting. And it's like one of my favorite quotes from forever ago. I believe it was Paul Klee who said, art does not render the visible, rather it makes visible, which I think is just the most perfect statement for what happens on the canvas or what the product is after the creative act. But anyway, I'm getting a little too passionate here, so I'm going to step down.
I like hearing artists and poets get passionate. You know, there's nothing to me more wonderful than listening to somebody talk about what they love. I remember, this friend of mine who's an accountant was going on and on about, because she gets really excited about numbers and math, and she's like, I'm sorry, I'm probably boring you. And I'm like, well, you know, math isn't my thing. I really suck at it. But when I listen to you talk about mathematics and the excitement in your voice, that makes me happy. And when I listen to the excitement and the passion in your voice, Dot, when you talk about your artwork and the creative process, it makes me happy, you know, so I think that is very cool.
Well, that's a very sweet thing to say. I really appreciate that.
Well, occasionally I can be sweet, but don't tell anybody because I can't have my reputation being ruined. I need them all to fear me.
You've already got the reputation for kindness and sweetness.
I don't know about that, but thank you, and wonderful, right? And Jody, what do we have next?
Yeah, I think that's what's great about poetry. You know, it gives you an avenue to channel your passions for sure.
Absolutely.
For appreciate it.
Next, I'm going to put up More Bear Dreams by Ursula W. McCabe. Pam, would you like to give that a read?
Did you ask me if I wanted to give it a read or?
Yeah, you. Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, no, you can just pretty much assign me whatever poems you want. So, but I would definitely be honored to read Ursula. More Bear Dreams by Ursula McCabe. And it goes like this. Up the high plateau, a meadow sits cupped by a ring of conifers. The tops of trees form fringe. I stay downwind and follow the bear. Insects are thick. Snow is gone. She is headed for berry fields. Balsam root flowers pop up, yellow petals and sunspots. No sounds come. Sun gleams off her dark pelt. Lustrous fur glows, moves in and out of thickets. Her cubs have grown. Now, like her, they live alone, solitary. She crunches tender sapling nubs. Round ears point forward. Her big head bobs. I stay back, look up, but night has not arrived to show the star sign. I was born in winter, safe in the dark. Always I search for more soft spots, tender places only found with when wild things allow themselves to be seen. Behind a snowberry, I crouch quietly and watch till the bear lumbers far beyond my sight. End poem. And what an absolutely stunning write by Ursula. And Dot, your thoughts?
Well, I always like each thing, so that one already has spoken to my heart. This poem is pretty much like a beautiful beach scene with seashell hunting, nice stuff. But it still foreshadows winter's harsh colors fading. Winter's harshness, I guess, with colors fading. And Seafarer's Song especially stood out. And Winter as Leviathan, if I'm saying that right, waiting offshore. So that's an imminent thing out there. It's a reminder to us that nothing is permanent and perhaps we should sit up and take notice. Summer turns into winter and things change. And part of what the poem is telling us, the cruel winter awaits, although how harsh can it be? The sea level will climb and the winds chill soar. And no one's trolling the shore anymore for seashells, which is kind of a sad thing, but we know it's going to turn around. It was a lyrical kind of write, and I love the words used in it. It's a good flow. It's a good rhythm. And I liked from Cobalt, the cornflower hue. There's so many little gems in this. It's kind of like actually being on the coastline, picking up sea glass and pretty rocks and seashells. So it was a double delight in that way. And I was very impressed, very much.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, me too. And yeah, I like what you had to say about how sometimes we really need to appreciate the moment, to look around and really acknowledge what's around us. So great observations there. And Jody, your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, I thought she beautifully captured the intimate connection between, you know, the observer and nature, you know, particularly through the lens of encountering a bear and his cub in a natural habitat. You know, the very vivid imagery, you know, portraying the setting of a high plateau with its meadows and conifers and anticipation of encountering wild creatures. That just sets the scene for, you know, a wonderful ride. A very subtle shift from the observer's reflection of her own birth to the tender moments of watching the bear and her cub, you know, kind of highlights the balance between mutual respect that we have for humans and wildlife in the wilderness. So yeah, I thought that was a great ride. Very well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I like that you bring up the mutual respect that's needed. You know, because it really is important. Like, people think that running into a bear is always this horrifying experience. Like, you're going to get attacked. The majority of time, and I'm not, obviously we know bear attacks do happen, and I'm not saying go look for the bears, but I can tell you that multiple times throughout my life, I have ran into a bear while going for a walk and just kept a safe distance, and, you know, it was a beautiful experience. It's like how Ursula describes it. Ursula describes the watching of a bear in the way that it should be done, keeping that respectful distance, acknowledging that, yes, this is a beautiful creature of nature, but it is also a creature that is strong, that is powerful, and a certain amount of respect needs to be given. You know, when I was a kid and lived in the middle of the woods, I only actually ever saw a bear once, not counting any that were shot during, you know, like bear season, but a live bear only once because they had the forest to hide in. Well, you know, now I live in a small town in Wisconsin, and more the habitats of the bears are getting pushed away, and so they're coming into town to eat. So within the last 25 years or so that I've lived in this small town, I've seen, you know, way more bears than I ever saw in the rest of my life, because they do have to come into town. I have to say that most of the time I honestly am not afraid of bears. Would I be afraid if one came charging at me? Oh, hell yes, I would be. But I've never had one charge at me, and I have a lot of different experiences to share, but I have to say the absolute cutest one to me was not, I wasn't there personally, but my mom was watching my son when he was 3 years old, and he was out at her house by the river, and he pointed up the tree and says, "Look, Grandma, there's a bear." And she told me she had thought he was using his imagination, and nope, sure enough, right above them was a baby bear. But I have to say, and I know I went off on a bit of a tangent there, but I find Ursula's poem very relatable to my own love for nature. Such amazing imagery, great attention to detail. I really like balsam root flowers pop up, yellow petals and sunspots, no sounds come, sun gleams off her dark pelt, lustrous fur glows, moves in and out of thickets. And then the mention of her cubs have grown. I like that part because I feel then it becomes not just about the bear, but about every mother who has had, or parents that has had to watch their children grow and become adults. So an amazing rite and very well done.
Well, I'll tell you what's amazing is somebody who reads the wrong poem and gives the wrong feedback. I actually read poems. I'm very visual. And I queued up the wrong poem, and you guys started talking about bears. I'm going, what in the world? I was at a store, and I thought, you guys should bust me on that now. It's my ADHD brain taking over and getting a little bit too ahead of itself. But I read the one about the sea. Which poem did I read? Ghost Town? Ghost Town.
Yeah.
I don't know how I go off track. And although I do love hearing you guys read the poems, I have to have the words on, you know, on my eyes, and sometimes I follow, sometimes I don't. So that was a great
okay. Well, I, you know what, I get that. I totally get it. We all have brains that work differently. I'm a very visual person too, and just so you know, Jody is posting all the poems that get the poems as they get read in Late Night Poets. So if you don't see it, just refresh and your page, and then sometimes you might have to look up past the conversation, you know, like if people are in the room making comments and
sure.
all that, you know, and, you
okay,
know, so, yes, but Jody is posting the poems in there, so, you know.
Well, I'll
and, all right, well, I did want to mention that Robbie says, that happened to me. I rode by a bear and didn't even know it. I was fishing in a stream, and I passed it by on my bike. Ironically, the fact that I didn't see it probably was good for me because I didn't panic. I was told it was there, so I made sure not to pass by there when I doubled back to go home after my leisurely bike ride. That was a nice leisurely bike. Yep, that would have been... I would have been the person who saw the bear because they seemed to just jump out in front of me for some reason or run across the street. But I like that story there, Robbie. Dot, was there something more that you wanted to add about the poem?
Well, other than, you know, I can't do two things at once. I've seen a lot of the poem, but I haven't read it for any kind of, you know, putting words together that you guys haven't already said. But I will say I really enjoyed the bear stories. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
You guys
bears. Yep.
Stories. That's wild.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I'll do better next one. Apologies, Sue.
You do great at commenting. I appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Well,
and Jody, what do we have next?
Unfortunately, I have never had a bear running, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I don't imagine you get many bears in Cincinnati, Ohio, do you?
No, we don't. We definitely get a lot of animals that belong in a zoo, but that's about it.
but more the humankind, right?
right. All right, next I'm going to post Seasons End by Robert Snow, and I'll give that a read for us. Let's see.
Well, maybe. It looks like, hey, Jody, I guess this poem was deleted, so... Go ahead and grab the next one. Yeah, that happens occasionally, and I didn't realize it.
Oh, okay. All right, so I will go with, let's do a SoundCloud by Eric Stevenson. I didn't lost it. Let's see, 1 second.
All right.
There it is. All right, here, let me get this posted real quick. And it is Transmigration of Souls, on the Transmigration of Souls by Eric Stevenson. And there it is.
Yeah, I think so.
On the Transmigration of Souls, no life visible until you stoop down low, as life in Africa teaches us to do. Gentle breath resuscitates, easy does it. Blow too hard and you get ash all over your face. Little by little, the ember glows red. With utmost care, cup it between dry grass. A minute ruby red Fabergé egg cuddles in a grass nest. What will become of its unlimited potential as the treasure chest of Africa recoups after centuries of colonial abuse? Will bequeathed breath provide warmth, transmigration from death to life, potential to see a score torch unlimited? Block and tackle mind grapples, talk, wrench, twist. Brave hearts soldier on, safeguard eternal hope. Fight fire with fire, back burn as life in Africa tends to do. Spontaneous combustion oft happens. Brittle bone, dry savanna grass, ignited by forked lightning. Fearless rhinos crash through thunder, blunder, thornbush. Stomp out blaze virgin where they can. Ardent alchemy of fire, life giver or taker. O mighty two-edged tinderbox tongue, will you smite, ignite backburn, fight fire with fire, as life in Africa would have us do, as worldwide in floundering Flanders fields, red poppies wait in segregated, secluded upper room minds. Entreat the spirit of truth to return. Place its seraphim flame seer upon our heads. While plumb line hearts below religiously pendulum, stalwart survival instinct metronomes life before hickory dickory clock docks death at 12. Will we willingly be the sacrificial flames reduced to ashes in urns while we await upon immortality's phoenix to rise again as we doggedly do ya in Africa and in the rest of the weary weighed down albatross world, dross, dread, and dynamite kegs. If prehistoric rhinos have the courage to charge through thunder blunder thornbush to crush fire virgin, why don't we? End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Eric wrote to prompt 8, which was, how many nights must it take one such as me to learn that we aren't, after all, made from the bird that flies out of its ashes, that for us, as we go up in flames, our one work is to open ourselves to be the flames. And Jody, your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, I always love his SoundClouds. Even when I don't hear his SoundClouds and I read his poetry, just reading it, I can still hear his voice. He does a wonderful job with them SoundClouds for sure. You know, I thought his poem beautifully captured the resilience and the adaptability inherent in life. You know, drawing parallels between the delicate process of nurturing a flame and the struggle for survival in Africa. You know, it delves into themes of colonialism, hope, and the innate instinct to fight against adversity, you know, that we all should have in ourselves. You know, definitely urges the reader to confront challenges with courage and determination. You know, I thought his imagery evoked a sense of both fragility and strength. So I liked how he weaved that together throughout the poem. You know, definitely urged us to emulate the fearless spirit of the rhinos charging through the thorn bush. So I thought he did a great job of that, right? As always, well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wonderful comment. And yeah, so oftentimes a nation's strength comes through in the most horrific and trying of times. So wonderful observation. And Dot, your thoughts?
Lots. There is so much to unpack in this poem. So many descriptive phrases and metaphors and so much concern. So, okay, I'm kind of blocked right now. The thing that gets me about it is the image of fire is kind of the underlying theme, and it, the ember of life, I think was how it was put, a powerful metaphor, tells us of life's delicate nature and the potential there for a comeback, that when the chips are down, there may indeed be an answer. The thing that touched me was the struggle, Africa's struggle. Like Jody mentioned, colonialism, it's compared to the back-burning technique, which I tried to look that up as the poem was being read. Can somebody enlighten me on the back-burning technique?
Well, backburn is... that's a backdraft. I was thinking of, isn't that when there's too much air gathered up within a room that has a flame and you open the door? But
yeah, they had a movie about that.
I don't know if backburn is the same thing as a backdraft. So I can't say for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe being, there you go, Jody, would make sense. Being set on the back burner, something that you say, like the expression setting something on the back burner for saving that thought for a later date. That makes sense.
I wondered if it was some sort of ritual or some sort of, I don't know, crossing over into adulthood. Anyway. The image of fire, as I said, and red is a constant. The red poppies. There is so much beautiful, there's so many beautiful sentences that I find myself pausing sometimes on the beauty of just a written phrase, that I sometimes get so absorbed in the phrases that it takes over, and I may not get the entire meaning. This is a poem that must be read at least twice, and I'll be reading this again later.
Absolutely.
There's so much going on, and it's so very deep and convoluted. I liked that there were questions in this, not just answers or instruction, I suppose, but there are questions like, where is that? Will we willingly be the sacrificial flames? And then it ends later with, why don't we? It's the challenge in here that's put forth. It makes us want to answer that and consider, I suppose, our own roles in trying to preserve this planet, this life, and the urgency, the passionate way this poem is written is just the cherry on top of the ice cream. The language, it conveys such an urgent and devoted passion for survival. And it's so deep. It's so very deep. And I feel like I'm just floundering here because I can't express exactly what I feel and what I have taken in from this poem. So, gosh, I'm glad we got Jody and Pam to do that. But it is.
I don't know about that, but some poetry is just so powerful and within its and deep within its message that it does take more than one reading, and sometimes it moves us to a point where we just retreat into the thoughts in our mind. Oh, and Robbie was nice enough to look up for us, and I had also looked it up too. But apparently, backburn is another word for controlled burn or controlled fire. Backburn is a controlled fire that's lit in the path of a wildfire to deprive it of combustible material. So Robbie was saying, it's that whole idea of fighting fire with fire. This is just an absolutely amazing write. Powerful lines, brilliant imagery and metaphors, an absolutely amazing write on the land of Africa. And that's one thing I like about sharing poetry and shows with poets from all around the world, is we take an American poet as inspiration, and then, you know, we have a poet from South Africa who takes that inspiration and draws upon it to write about their own land, their own history, the trials and tribulations that the people of this land has gone through, the idea of fighting fire with fire, and the idea of how truly both fragile and simultaneously strong the human spirit can be. I really like a minute ruby red Fabergé egg cuddles in a grass nest. What will become of its unlimited potential as the treasure chest of Africa recoups after centuries of colonial abuse? Will bequeathed breath provide warmth, transmigration from death to life, potential to sear, scorch, torch, unlimited. You know, that idea that within the flame is that potential life. An amazing write and very well done. And Jody, what do we have next?
Next, I'm going to put a poem by Grant G. called Another Day. Dot, would you like to give that a read?
Let me find. Oh, here it is. Okay, hang on a minute. I gotta have a sip of water. Okay. Another day. Hand in hand they sit, wearing the draggled clothing. She dons daisies in hair, freshly picked this morning. Names don't matter here, nor this place of birth. People come and then they go, another journey, bus, train, hitching more, doesn't matter how they travel. Sorry, lost place. Nothing matters, nothing changed. Gray concrete block always paves their way. Another cardboard city. Another day to play. They sit on wall outside. Fresh air frees them from homeless stench. He smiles when she's happy. He keeps her feeling great under the stars Moon shines bright. Tarpaulin falls, flaps, reminding them of homeless ways. He begs and busts. She hustles much. At night, they booze, they kiss, and drug. Tomorrow, another day. End of poem.
Wonderful read there, Dot, and what an absolutely powerful and brilliant write by Grant G. With hard-hitting, impactful short lines, he paints a raw and gritty picture of the humanity within homelessness and drug addiction. You know, he shows us these two homeless drug addicts, but he doesn't show them to us as just addicts and just homeless. He shows them to us as lovers who's trying to find some sort of comfort within life, some sort of beauty within the ugliness. I really like where he says, she dons daisies in hair, freshly picked tis morning. Names don't matter here, nor does place of birth. And I think those are especially hard-hitting lines because you see this woman trying to make herself beautiful, trying to find some sort of beauty in the ugliness of this cardboard city, which the cardboard city was a great imagery to describe, the cardboard boxes that so many homeless people live in, and names don't matter here. I mean, how often do we walk by somebody who looks out of sorts or doesn't look like they belong or, you know, looks dirty? And too oftentimes we dismiss the fact that they have a name, that they are a person. Great lines all the way through, but, you know, under stars, moon shines bright, tarpaulin flaps, reminding them of homeless ways. And I like how that speaks on the idea that, yes, we can look out our windows from our houses and apartments. We can look up the moon and the stars and think, oh, how beautiful. And they are beautiful. But I imagine that your perspective of the moon and stars is so much different when you don't have the four walls and the roof. So amazing write and very well done. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a wonderful write. You know, he painted a picture of the transient nature of life for those living on the streets through simple yet evocative imagery. You know, it captured the daily struggles and fleeting moments of joy experienced by a homeless couple. Like you said, you know, the absence of names and birthplaces, that just, you know, emphasizes the universal plight, you know, while the repetition of another day underscores the relentless cycle of their existence. And despite their hardships, I seem somewhat sense of resilience and companionship portrayed in their bond, you know, as they navigate through the challenges together. It's got to be difficult. You know, the poem was raw and honest, you know, by the reflection on societal neglect and the resilience of human spirit in the face of adversity. I mean, it's just mind-boggling how much money a country's government can spend on an hourly basis, and yet so many people without homes in this country.
Yeah, that's well a done. True, absolutely, absolutely wonderful comment. And I'd like to welcome Robbie to the show. Welcome, Robbie. Glad you could join us.
Hello. How are you?
Doing great. And yourself?
Oh, pretty good. I've gotten a lot of generosity and love from people today. Like the one poet gave me a shout out elsewhere. He hadn't heard me in a long time, and he gave me a shout out. And yeah, so it's been a good day that way.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. And did you get a chance to read Grant's poem?
Yes, and it's something that really hit home for me because where I live, we have a particularly strong homeless problem. Like, we just, there's homeless encampments that have popped up in a lot of places. And last year especially, there was a huge controversy because there's one really big one that had come up around where a gas station used to be, and it was close to the mall. And it, like, it's such an excruciatingly hard problem to try to solve because you don't want to push out people, but at the same time, if an encampment comes up and then problems come up that are associated with that, you know, like you want to balance things out where you're helping people, but you don't want other people are passing by, you don't want them to feel like they're in danger for some reason. Like if there's someone who's, you know, who isn't receiving the proper mental care and that sort of thing, you know? And so it's, I've seen it a lot over the past couple of years especially, and I thought this poem did a good job of capturing, like, you know, like you were saying, that the humanity that's still there, like reminding us that the people have names and they're all people with individual and distinct lives, and, you know, you don't know what it is that led them to the situation that they're in. And I think people have a tendency to say, well, you know, they must have made bad decisions or there's this or that. But, you know, that's definitely not necessarily the case.
That is so true. That is so true. Thank you for that. Great comment. And Dot, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, okay. That was a fun one to read. I like the way the poem was structured, and I like how love is love no matter where you are, whatever the conditions. Love is always a wonderful thing, and it's not diminished by place or hardship, and it's to be revered. And I like the way the poet kind of showed us the hardship and all of the messiness, I'll say, of the situation of homelessness. But in spite of it, it was still love. It was still a real love, a real feeling. And as I said, it doesn't make it any less of a wonderful relationship because of time and place.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like that. Love can defy time and place. It can defy hardships. So, wonderful comment. And Jody, what do we have next?
I want to welcome Robbie to the show. Glad to have you. And you know how we do around here. We'll put your feet to the fire real quick. So
especially the past couple of times, I know, and I ready myself. I say to myself, okay, I'm probably reading the next poem. Yeah, I'm used to it.
All right.
No, it's
all right, so I'll put up "And When It Ends" by Tomahawk.
Okay, I got it. So here we go with "And When It Ends" by Tomahawk. Haughty assumptions of concrete thoughts puzzled me, but still, I seemed to recognize the hidden image, a sudden burst of Nick Topeta kind of confidence ensued, enveloping my mind. My mind, weary mind, with bracing petulance. And just who the hell is Nick Topella, by the way? And then suddenly, inexorably, I saw the daylight. Yeah, that's right. Me, the original daylight stranger. Sort of a Gary Pusett Union Gap bent, serving up a feast of half-cocked deniability of newfangled ridiculousness. This day of days, ridiculousness, you say, scoffingly kind. Well, Miss Smarty Pants, with your self-serving ire, you smug professionalista with 40 DDs air on display, I am confident in my presumption of literary guilt. Aren't we presumed guilty until proven innocent? All I know is that when it ends, reason takes a hike. We'll just be remembered for our brash bra strap logic, because when the bra comes off, they dangle like participles, there for a purpose, but serving no purpose, but to titillate. Titillate. Get it? So it is with my legion of dispassionate passion verbiage, forever trying to prove a point to no one who will listen, I sally forth to create the ultimate nonsense in literature with rapier sharp innuendo. Do I phase into another dream? But this dream may very well end up a nightmare. For writing all these words was supposed to have meaning. Yes, a meeting. But to whom? Like a mystery inside a riddle, wrapped by an enigma. In other words, the very thing that made no sense was in fact the sense all along, the key to the lock. If I succumb in this completely mind-numbing process, then what I did was not all in vain. For those who don't know, don't know what they don't know. But those who can read and discern, it may bring order to chaos. And when it ends, I'll be Pulitzer. And that was And When It Comes by Tomahawk. And I'm going to have to take a moment to blah, 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 untie my tongue. That one was an interesting and fun poem to read, but holy crap, tongue-tied, tongue twister galore.
Right, well... Yeah, it was quite a tongue twister. That is
for
sure. Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Not just over it.
Well, you did a great read of that, Robbie. And this was such a clever write. Love the humor in it. I cracked up laughing when you read titillate. Get it?
But you could tell I had fun with that part, didn't? Yeah, I had fun with that part.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And Jody, your thoughts on this, right?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that one. Thank God you got that one, Robbie. Because I would have probably read that one next, I'm sure. But all right.
It was all part of your plan.
Yeah, diabolical. All right. I thought the poem, kind of took a reader on a whirlwind journey, self-reflection and existential questioning, wrapped in layers of wit and wordplay. I thought it was very playful, yet pointed commentary on life, literature, self-awareness. It definitely invites the reader to ponder deeper meanings while keeping them entertained with its clever turns of phrases. So I thought it was a very thought-provoking and engaging piece. He wrote, take all the whimsical tongue twisters out of it, huh? But yeah, I thought it was very clever. Well done.
Absolutely. It was absolutely clever for sure. So great comment. And Dot, your thoughts?
Well, I always loved me a self-deprecating type of writing or presence. And this one is so playful, and it is so interesting, pop culture references. Does anybody still remember Gary Puckett and the Union Gap? Oh, my. And a very conversational, very likable tone in this particular write, which is quite appealing. It makes you want to read the rest. I love, I've underlined a few things that I really like. The image of bra straps dangling like participles. I had a little giggle snort with that one. It's it's cute, and it's a very unique way of stating a point. Okay, and again, you're talking the creative process within this, and within all the cheekiness and all the silliness and all the clever, wonderful phrases, there's a dose of frustration and uncertainty. And the potential fear, I guess, also the liberation of creating something new. I love this poem. It has a great style. It has personality plus, and to the author, very nice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wonderful comment there. Thank you. And Robbie, your thoughts?
Well, it sounds like everybody got, like, hit in the same spots sort of with the giddiness and that, because it was tough not to giggle when I said dangling participles when I read that part. I think I literally, like, it was just under the surface. And with this poem, it has that kind of absurdist tone where I like absurdist that doesn't morph into just like actually being absurd. Like it really doesn't make a point. You know, I like when it's being absurdist, but it's still making a point. And it's funny because this kind of reminded me in a small way of Seinfeld, because Seinfeld has that kind of absurdist thing, and it has like, it kind of does those little life observation things. And in this poem, it said an enigma and wrapped in a riddle or something like that. And I was seeing where Jerry Seinfeld was talking about Newman, and someone said, "Oh yeah, he's an enigma, you know, wrapped in a riddle." It says, "Yeah, he's an enigma wrapped in a Twinkie." I just thought of that right away. but yeah, the poem overall, it was very effective at balancing that out, where it was making a point with the cheeky turns of phrase and everything, but it didn't go in that direction like so many of these poems do, where it goes so far in that you're just getting lost in the actual in the actual images, you know, as opposed to the meaning. So kudos to that.
Absolutely. You're right. He does balance out the so-called ridiculousness of absurdity of the humor along with the serious message. And I think it starts right away with those opening lines. Haughty assumptions of concrete thought puzzled me, but still I seem to recognize the hidden image. We are oftentimes, and there is a self-deprecating humor, as Dot was saying, oftentimes we are too haughty, we are too full of ourselves. We think that because somebody thinks different than us, we are the right ones. You know, we have this idea of being full of ourselves, making these assumptions. My stepmother used to always say, don't assume anything, because you make an ass out of you and me. And I think that message comes across in this poem, the idea that we make those assumptions, we make those presumptions, and we find ourselves like jackasses hanging out when we shouldn't be. And yeah, there was definitely plenty of a laugh to be had throughout this poem. But I did particularly also like those last two stanzas and the idea of those things which should and should not be exposed as far as thoughts. So excellent write and very well done. And Jody, what do we have next?
Next, I'm going to put up Open Channels on an Untuned Receiver by Kenneth C. Perkins, and I'll give that a read.
Oh, we have a recording for this, Jody.
Oh, well, Never mind then. It's on a receiver.
All right. Well, then, here we go.
Title: Open Channels on an Untuned Receiver. One's essence is imperceivable, lost in knowing, disguised in discernment, convoluted in confidence, attainable only through ineptitude's acceptance. Jigsaw puzzled, intact in broken pieces, I found peace within impalpable plausibility. Though I accept I cannot find, I do not give up the search. Therefore my sated appetite hungers, an active existence full on emptiness. For potential should be a mind's gorged gut, lacking definition and starving to be fed. Awareness is aloof ignorance, anonymous arrogance, abstract argumentative agreement, extrapolation and implementation of decided indecisiveness, static, sustainable, invulnerable stasis, difficulty, trying too hard, the illusion of ability, simplicity, apathy's finger on surrender's trigger. Direction is intentional confinement, progression's roadblock, sights stop sticks, grasp lifts freely beyond the reach of capture. Where rests the things we seek to acquire, acquisition is the death of attainability. Certainty is a cage, scissors clipping wings, thirst drowning buoyancy, wanton disregard toward freedom, and ego gratifying vanity. Change is momentous momentum, an open air engine, driven by failure's indifference, stabilized on the track of enlightenment. Drive on, mindless of destinations, losing ourselves in the search for ourselves. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Kenneth. I'm very glad you were inspired, and thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I thought it was a profound exploration of the complexities of existence and self-awareness. Thought it had vivid imagery and poetic language throughout. I thought he delved into the struggles to grasp one's essence and the elusive nature of understanding. Ultimately, I thought the poem encouraged readers to embrace change, pursue self-discovery, find a meaning in the journey rather than just accept the destination, which I think everyone should strive for in life. So, very well done.
I like that. Finding meaning in the journey. Very cool. And Robbie, your thoughts?
Well, is that a... kind of a double track of unique imagery that I haven't come across before in a poem, where it's kind of like it's talking about tuning into the universe, which is something I kind of, an image that I accord with right now, because I've been starting to listen to radio again, like actual radio as opposed to internet radio. And I found like when you have that action of like actually tuning into something, it connects you to it more. Like I feel like I'm actually engaged more with the radio when I tune in, because I'm physically tuning into what I know is a physical signal. And I kind of feel like that's in this poem, is that kind of with the idea of how he has those images that kind of make you feel like he's talking about tuning into things, but also like being on track with things, like getting on the right track to understand the universe. And even though I doubt it was intended with his recording and how it sounded, like the physical properties of the recording, like it kind of sounded like he was in a small room, and it has a bit of like a, almost like a an echo to it or a tin, and that to me reflected well of what he was talking about, because he was just with the idea of like kind of like you're in a small space and you're trying to figure out things. It just generally felt like it was like the right atmosphere for the poem to be read.
It really did. I have to agree with you that I thought the same thing, that the tinny, almost, you know, robotic sound of the reading fit well with the idea of the search for one's own humanity. And so great observations. And Dot, your thoughts?
There's a grappling with some existential questions, and the poem highlights of the continuous journey of exploration, like who are we, why are we here, what's in this universe. It is a self-awareness type of writing, and the language is quite nice. The poet obviously has a very well-developed vocabulary, and there were some words. Okay, I love some of the phrases. Aloof ignorance, impalpable plausibility, and momentum. And these are all kind of funny terms, but apt and very descriptive. But they do help convey some of the complexities of the themes that are explored. And there are the literary devices rich there too: alliteration, paradox, metaphor. It all just serves to enhance the meaning and the depth of this poem, and it was quite a nice write. I'm a satisfied customer. The end.
Absolutely. Very cool comment. I like that. I like that. That the use of alliteration in this was great. The spacing he uses to give us that opportunity to pause between stanzas, and the fact that he has certain lines that stand on their own, and each of the lines with the word is, and the word is capitalized, which makes me think of the idea of how IS can stand for island, and the idea that too oftentimes, while in the process of seeking ourselves, we become so lost that we forget to connect with the rest of society. And it really is a very introspective piece. Looking at the idea of how oftentimes our arrogance can come through and we can become lost and need to be redirected back into a sense of awareness. So great lines all the way through, wonderful wordplay, and very well done. And I'm just giving everyone a heads up who's listening in. We'll probably get one, maybe two more writes done, and then we are going to have carryovers, which I will either put on a break on through show, or I know Jody and I have another show on the 25th, so we might put them on there before getting into whatever topic Jody's going to choose for us for the 25th, because that's going to be his job for that week. And I'm looking forward to that. What's that, Jody?
All tongue twisters.
Ah, that sounds fun.
Interesting 2 hours.
We actually did a tongue twister show before. It was fun. It was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But what do we have next, Jody?
Okay, next I'm going to put up a write by Betty Page, Let Go of the Wheel. Pam, would you like to give that a read?
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. And this is Let Go of the Wheel by Betty Page. Let go of the wheel, let me get lost as you lead. Please take me home, love. Let me lose control, take me where we want to go. Bring me to your room. Inhibition's gone. We've waited much, much too long, tired of being strong. Take me everywhere, anywhere, anytime. Let's make up for lost time. Again and again, yes, I definitely want love, you all my life. Each timeline, lifetime, infinite lovers we two, no others will do. Let go of the wheel, let me get lost as you lead. Please take me home, love. Let me lose control. Take me where we want to go. Bring me to your room. Inhibition's gone. We've waited much, much too long. Tired of being strong. Take me everywhere, anywhere, anytime. Let's make up for lost time. End poem. Boy, it's like Jesus Take the Wheel, only with a bit of kinkiness added to it. Wow, I like that. Yeah, very cool. And Dot, your thoughts?
Well, you know that I like Betty's poems an awful lot. This one is quite sweet and maybe at the same time just a bit salacious. So who are these two people? And they almost sound like they're sneaking off because there's so much in love. It's a romantic, right? A longing, a need, wanting to share that feeling of love, desire, longing, passion. And Betty really has a way of repeating certain phrases in just the right place. So the repetition here works wonderfully. Let's see, the phrases were let go of the wheel and take me home, love. The poem is a theme of surrendering control and letting just love itself take the wheel, I guess. And to go with the flow, let's go with this. The love is good. And, you know, get a room or something. So, yeah, I love it. It's sweet. It's tender. But it has a little underlying question mark. But in the end, who cares? Be happy. And what time is it? Because my brain cells check out about this time every night. So that's all I have. I'm sorry, Betty Page. You know I love your stuff. But my brain cells are running on raw nerve right now.
No problem. No problem. I understand. And thank you. Thank you for your time. Great comment. Yeah, I really enjoy and appreciate these lines and how they speak on not only love, but love and trust. So beautiful, right? Jody, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought you did a great job, you know, capturing the longing and desire for connection and intimacy. You know, the repetition of the phrase, take me everywhere, anywhere, anytime, you know, definitely emphasized yearning to seize the moment and live fully in love. You know, I thought it had a great theme of surrendering control and embracing vulnerability throughout. You know, I thought she expressed the willingness to let go and be led by her beloved. Overall, I thought it was a passionate expression of longing and desire, you know, to make the most of every moment you have together with your loved one. So, very well done by Betty Page.
It truly was. It truly was. Great comment. And Robbie, your thoughts?
Well, definitely by far what captured me the most was the whole thing about being strong, you know, and wanting to not have to be strong. because that's an element in my life where I've always had to be strong and be a strong one. So I definitely appreciated that. And overall, this poem really spoke to a lot of my certain overall, like parts of my overall philosophy in that. I like that idea of just letting go. And you know, to me, it's so important to be able to be with somebody where you can just let go and you can just be intimate or be loving to each other, and you're not worrying about this or that hang up or you know, or like, you know, whatever dynamics might happen to get in the way in the relationship, like whether it's, you know, long distance or other personal things or whatever. So I really appreciate that. And I think in a way, this is a lot of people these days looking at this poem would maybe feel what this poem says more, because we've all been through the ringer for a long time now, and we've had to be strong for a long time. So I think I would hazard to guess that a lot of people are in this mind state where they do want to lose control with somebody and want to be closer to somebody, because they've all been like made to be separate for so long and all that. But I think this is definitely a sentiment that people are wanting to come back to even more so than usual right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is so true. Yeah, I think so many people want to find somebody they trust enough to just be themselves. When you said something about hanging out, I thought there was going to be followed by a comment about double D's hanging out. But alas, there was not. But I thought this was a wonderful write on releasing one's inhibitions, and as I said, both love and trust. And so I really like inhibitions gone. We waited much, much too long. Tired of being strong. Take me everywhere, anywhere, anytime. Let's make up for lost time. You know, and I thought those were such wonderful lines. And as Dot said, you know, she has such great use of repetition. Now, I'm not going to try to fit in another write, because I know that person would get really shorted on comments. And I don't want that. I want us to be able to bring the rest of the writes over to another show where people won't get shorted on comments. And I have to say, great show tonight, Jody. Thank you, as always, for being my co-host. Thank you, Dot and Robbie, for calling in. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Naomi and Phil and Zach for hanging on the board. Phil, we appreciate everything you do. And of course, make sure everyone to join us 30 minutes after this show ends for Break On Through with myself and Intimidus Rex. Like I said, this has just been a wonderful lineup of poetry and comments tonight, and great company. And thank you, everyone. And Jody, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
Another great show. I really enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun. I appreciate everybody coming on and everybody that's on the board tonight. Great poetry tonight. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Enjoy.
Good night, everyone.